And if for folks that are listening too, if you have some ideas about how we might be able to kind of break through as well, please, reach out and let us know, because it's definitely it's a known issue and something we kind of talked about.
If you're lucky here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, available anywhere, anytime on the internet, WFPR.FM, and in the local Franklin Mass FM radio dial. Yeah, the dial, that thing that you turn the knobs on, or maybe you've got a preset button, 102.9 on the FM band. Here virtually today with our school committee chair, Dave Callahan, because yeah, there was a school committee meeting this week, so we get to do our chalkboard chat today. Thanks, Dave.
Hey, absolutely. And we're kind of having some back-to-back, very efficient meetings. So I'm loving it. It's been fantastic.
That's a nice road to be on. Yes. Although I'm sure at some point in time, we may just kill that thing because, there's going to be a lot of business that's going to crop up somewhere, and we'll eat our words.
But you know what? I'm going to take it as I got them now, but still happy to do these reviews, of the last meeting regardless.
Right. And for the listeners, for the newbies, thank you for joining us. For the regulars, thanks for coming back. And for the newbies, what we're attempting to do is just condense the school committee meeting. So as we were discussing, it wasn't kind of the 3 to 4 hour session that they have had from time to time. It was, 90 minutes or so. So it'll be easier to condense, and we're going to get right to that.
Fantastic.
So a couple of key pieces there taken out of the superintendent's update, I think it would be a good way to start. He mentioned budget workbooks were created to develop this year's, the next year budget, but the budget that's in process. You're already operating under one, and you're going to start developing a new one. For reference, last year, during the budget prep, you effectively did zero-based budgeting because of the redistricting. Now, from what I understand, it's another aspect of zero-based budgeting, but starting with the schools and the principals in the new structure and still replicating that zero-based approach. And that's dynamite.
It is. It's fantastic because, just for what, just for every folks, make sure we're all on the same page. What it really means is that they're starting from the ground level and building up in each of the buildings kind of making the budget based on that. So it's really kind of like making it so you're not coming in with these assumptions, and as we're developing the budget, it's not a copy and paste job, but coming in and making sure that every single dollar that's spent, every single position, that everybody clearly knows why this money is being spent where it is, why the money is kind of being allocated here and not there. And it's not kind of taking in, like I said, any assumptions from last year, previous year. It's a lot of work, though, and I commend them tremendously for doing it. I kind of mentioned it at the meeting, but when I was in grad school, I got my master's in public administration, and I remember Dr. George Jarnes talking about the different ways to budget, and this was always in a perfect world, this is how you do it, because you can really kind of go and just get into the weeds of everything, and everybody fully understands why you're spending the money there. He goes, but in reality, nobody has time or the bandwidth to do zero-based budgeting. And yet here they are, rising to the occasion. And so I give them so many thanks and commendations for doing what they're doing here. It's fantastic.
Yeah. And for the listeners, I want to reinforce that point for two reasons. One, to your point, zero-based budgeting is an effort from the ground up, no presumptions. It's justifying what expenses need to be made. Secondly, because clearly with the biennial election coming, there are some candidates who respectfully don't have a clue on the details in the school budget. And they're implying that, we can find some ways to do things. Well, you've effectively gone ahead, because one of the things that if they came to it, would be a zero-based budget approach. And you're already stepping ahead of that, taking some of their thunder away from them to that extent.
And certainly not the intent, but it's just, they're Superintendent Jaguar, his entire team, they're always, they're operating at such a high level, and especially with the timing as well. This is something, and Chairman Mercer and plenty of others have they've kind of given their thanks to Lucas and his team for last year moving up the whole budget process. Normally, it was kind of a springtime thing, and then by end of January, early February, we had our entire budget book out and doing the public hearings, all that ready for public, for consumption. And now here we are in October, and they're starting that process all over again. You can kind of anticipate, in very early future school committee meeting to start seeing more of that budget kind of take shape and kind of be presented out for everybody to kind of, look at, kick the tires on. And so the fact that they're again, months ahead of where maybe the schools had been in past years. And so that way everybody can follow along. And so, for some of those, individuals who are just kind of now joining the conversations and wondering, I thought I heard this or whatever the situation might be, join us, at the meetings, pay attention as we're kind of moving this along and see, the school budget hasn't been this, 4%+ increase from year over year over year. Last year we barely got a 1% increase. And really kind of see that, there is no fat to be had. And as we're doing this zero-based budgeting, we're building up, from the ground up and really kind of starting with those necessities, doing the bones and then kind of adding on top of that.
The other key piece, I think, and we haven't really touched on it, and I say we because certainly I help share what happens in the meetings, but I don't think there's been much discussion recently in terms of my recollection over the years in terms of kind of the instructional overview, instructional monitoring, and teacher evaluations. It has come up from time to time. And I think it's given us an opportunity. And I know I've spoken with Dr. Rogers. I'm overdue speaking with Paula to get into a similar deep dive, if you will, on the special ed side. But the fact that the central office, at least acknowledging they've doing the start, especially for the new schools, of that teacher evaluation process with central office and other key personnel coming in to do that. I think that's an also a good piece that emphasizes the oversight role of central office initially, but oversight for school committee as well.
You're and absolutely right, and I'd love to. I can't wait to listen to those deep dives that you kind of do with all those great folks as well. And but it's and it's true. They're there. They're in the buildings, and I know, and we have the opportunity as well for school committee members to kind of go into the buildings. KP and I just went. I mentioned at the meeting. Oversight, but to check out the lunch and kind of how that whole the cafeteria structure kind of operates now, which is phenomenal, by the way. They are, and I mentioned at the meeting, it was like a NASCAR pit crew getting all those kids in, out, seated. It was fantastic. But all that to say, yeah, that definitely when it kind of looks at that oversight, these are the folks that are still walking the halls, going into the building, seeing exactly kind of how they are. And how the school process is going. And I give again so much credit to the superintendent and his team for getting out there to all the different schools to see it on a day-to-day basis and not just kind of, you don't want an administrative team that's just in that ivory tower.
And that's one of the key aspects of both administration and certainly the teachers. The teachers are expecting that kind of evaluation. It's part of their accreditation to a certain extent. They have to have a good review in order to continue accreditation, et cetera. So, yeah. Moving along to another key topic that you had a presentation on the club offerings, both from the high school and middle school. And respectfully, it sounds like the high school is a little bit advanced in the process, given the nature of their business and their cycle. And they're not in, like in the middle school, just bringing three groups together in the new school and a new organization. So, respectfully, they're a little bit behind, but it sounds like they're going to have some clubs up and running soon.
They are, which is, and when we kind of talk about like the zero-based like budget, Mr. Williams over there, the principal of Franklin Middle, is effectively doing a zero-based programmatic approach mm-hmm. to the thing, because it's three unique schools with cultures, students, families, staff from all over the place, all kind of coming together. And he's doing a phenomenal job of not just kind of saying, all right, well, we're going to pick one school, and then this is, you know, whatever was being done over at Remington is now just the de facto, this is what we're always going to do. And instead, really looking to kind of build everything up to say, what's going to be the best for all of us over here at Franklin Middle? And because of that, we got, you know, giving him a little bit, you know, his everything with the clubs, like you mentioned, you know, aren't at the same level timeline of where they are at the high school. But again, that's okay. He has a lot of work that he is doing a fantastic job with that too. And also too, from the middle school level. And when Al Charles, Dave McNeil and I, we kind of first kind of came around, a lot of the middle school clubs were just non-existent or had, you know, there was, and so the fact that there's so many that are, that they're talking about or will be introducing, it's just fantastic to kind of see that growth coming on back. And then at the high school, though, yeah, Dr. Weber, they had presented out about the club fair. And one of the big pieces that we did discuss, too, though, was that the clubs, much like a lot of the high school classes, they're running kind of contingent upon interest.
Right.
And she did mention it's a budgetary issue. You know, we don't have the funds to be able to kind of run some clubs that might only, you know, have just a small handful of kiddos that are interested. In the same fashion that they had to kind of cut some high school level classes for, you know, because there wasn't enough interest and we can't afford to pay teachers to kind of run, you know, some classes where the class size might be, you know, five or less. And so, but they still have a lot of great offerings. I know my own daughter has already signed up for a couple. She's very excited about it. And so mm-hmm. It's great that area is kind of thriving again as well.
Yeah, and I think the level and the slight behindness, if you will, and we want to use that respectfully because the middle school is coming together to meet in the middle at this time. But it's really a marrying together of teachers' interest to become the advisors and the students' interest in this or that topic. And hopefully you'll get enough of a marrying together that the teacher says, oh, I can do this. And the kids say, yes, that's what I want to do. And then the other point, we talked about it before, but one of the benefits of redistricting, potentially in the three prior schools, just to make up a number, you could have had 5, 5, 5. Now put them together. Now you got 15. That may be much more viable than what it was in the prior arrangement.
Exactly. You know, and that, and also too, we discussed like the late bus, because that was big, and that was something that was preventing a lot of some clubs from running, but also student access. And while we had got confirmation at the high school the late bus will be running, it was still kind of being developed at the middle school, but highly likely. Whereas in before, because right now you have one pickup point for the middle school. Before, when we're trying to kind of coordinate to have three different extra buses kind of go around to different parts of town, it was non-viable. And so another one of those benefits that's coming through the reorganization efforts over the past couple of years.
Yeah, and I think closely related to that was the point that at least was broadcast in the meeting and discussed. If people aren't aware, it's only one fee. Of I think it's $128 per student to enable them to join one or more clubs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like a season pass to all the different clubs. And so Dr. Weber did mention that there are clubs that are, you know, whereas in maybe before when we're kind of in a different financial situation, that there were no other almost like hidden fees. You know, you go, you buy an air, you know, you got an airline ticket, and then all of a sudden you're doing the extra baggage or, you know, paying extra
bucks
to get your seat or whatever the situation is. There are those extra fees that are kind of coming around dependent upon the specific club. You don't want to introduce these barriers. You know, you want to be able to have kiddos be able to access as many opportunities as they can. Unfortunately, that's not the community that we kind of live in. But what is great, though, especially as you mentioned, like some of those folks that are just now kind of paying attention to the budgets around the school, we're not throwing around, throwing away money. We're looking at it from every single angle. And if, there's all these added costs that kind of come on in, such as, some competition fees, those are being deferred to the students and to the families to kind of pay for. So that way, just so folks, if I know it happens all the time, and especially around election season, everybody talks about trimming the fat. And just to really kind of continue to underline that point that, it's just not the situation that Franklin Public Schools is in or building their budgets for. That when they look at all these extra fees that kind of along with, say, with clubs, they're acutely aware of all of those kind of bag fees from the airlines, and not looking to kind of absorb that within the operating budget or the revolving account.
A lot of goodness there. The other slight takeaway, and I don't mean to diminish it by slight by any means, but the late bus is if a student has a bus pass, they're eligible for the late bus.
Yes, and that was a great one too. So that it's you've already kind of gone and paid $387 to kind of go and ride the bus. You got your bus pass. The way that they basically kind of illustrate is to say, well, you know what? It doesn't matter which bus necessarily you're coming home on. You've already paid to ride a bus home. You're going to be able to continue to ride a bus home. It just might be the late bus because you're staying after for an extra club or whatever the activity is.
And then the next key portion of the meeting was the presentation from the Franklin Food Pantry. Both Executive Director Tina Potterly was there, and then Laura Daugherty did most of the talking for a change for her. But that both of them did wonderfully, and it was a great conversation to listen into.
He did, and I mean, those two are just—they're fantastic. And the Franklin Food Pantry itself is such a great asset to this community. And so they had had the opportunity to meet with them last month, tour the facility, which is remarkable, by the way, too, for folks who hadn't seen it before. And kind of from there, we had two big, kind of things that came out of it. One was to make sure they brought back to the came back to the school committee, because it had been quite some time since I remember them kind of presenting out during a school committee meeting. And just so that we can continue to kind of spread awareness, so for folks maybe who are in need are kind of aware of some of the great services, like they just started introducing curbside pickup orders on Tuesday evenings, and but also for other folks maybe who are looking to volunteer their time. Because it's an immense, a service that's staffed by an incredible volunteer team.
Yeah, and to clarify, the volunteers on the one hand is about 600, 125 are required weekly to do all the operation. The Tuesday curbside actually got introduced back in the COVID days. The introduction or expansion is now, I think it's the five contiguous communities, which even in a conversation that I've had with some of the food pantry folks in other recordings, we've had situations where Franklin folks, because of housing here, needed to move to another neighborhood outside Franklin. They were now prevented from coming from the food pantry. Now, through that expansion of the curbside pickup for those five contiguous communities, they can now sign up and still participate. And that's a great thing to do. Clearly, they've had to plan for it. That's part of their strategy. They had some bandwidth. And fortunately, as long as the community continues to help provide, whether the volunteer hours, the resources, the food from time to time, they can then give it to the people who truly need it.
And I mean the need is there for folks maybe who if you haven't yet seen their presentation, please definitely kind of check it out. But they also included a wonderful flyer that went with it. But I mean the need in our community and surrounding communities, it's there. And so it was wonderful to kind of have them. And we also kind of talked about too the that you know, they see they you know, they have a weekend backpack program with to kind of supply kiddos that are in need, as you know, Friday afternoon before before the weekends. And they what they see though is that the students and the families that they know of, you know, in eighth grade, are oftentimes kind of drop off the radar over that summer in high school.
Right.
And there's a definite hurdle of trying to continue to kind of reach and provide that support for our high school students. And we discussed some ideas. There's a grant opportunity where if we're able to house a pantry within a school, so at within like say the high school building, Stop and Shop will be able to provide a tremendous amount of grant funds. So again, funding not kind of coming from the food pantry, not coming from the school operating budget, but to continue to kind of provide those services for high schoolers that we know there are, you know, those kiddos still are in need and still exist. And a few other ideas that I know will continue to kind of be worked on, developed by the school wellness advisory, SWAC, mm-hmm. and over the coming months. And if for folks that are listening too, if you have some ideas about how we might be able to kind of break through as well, please, you know, reach out and let us know, because it's definitely, it's a known issue and something we kind of talked about at last meeting as well.
Yeah, and it's one of folks should be aware of that through my other hat, if you will, I do volunteer for the pantry to help get their word out. So there's a number of recordings. We just did one as well for the Turkey Trot, that event coming up on Thanksgiving morning, which is a key fundraiser for the food pantry. But yeah, the food pantry is certainly open to ideas, and certainly the public information is available in regards to how to reach any of the school committee members or Superintendent Jagir, Colin. They're already working on some ideas, but if there's another twist or another idea that's worth exploring, yes, let's figure it out.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because food stigma is still unfortunately here, akin to some others, you know, mental health being one. And it's going to require education. It's going to require civil conversations in order to, you know, get by that and then make things happen for folks. Well, I think that, the good of the order that brought up, and for those who may not be aware, good of the order gives you as a school committee once a month an opportunity to raise other ways that you might be able to do business within the school committee agenda format. And I think, at least from my perspective, you got some three smacking ideas there.
We really did. No, this was fantastic. You know, we had one of the first ones, the first two from Al Charles, but one kind of talk about with citizens' comments and with his notion to kind of strike. Normally, the citizens' comments, remember from memory, you know, all those, you know, in audience, person online who would like to speak on an issue not on tonight's agenda and falls within the committee's purview. And it's that line, not on tonight's agenda, that he had recommended. Can we strike away? So that way, if folks, you know, they're here, they sat through the meeting, they heard about the presentations and discussions that were going on, and they want to give their two cents in the moment and provide real time feedback, like, let's do it. You know, and which is, I think, fantastic, especially because a lot of times, you know, we've had those conversations after the meeting's over. Right. You know, folks are still kind of sat around, hey, I heard this, what about this? Or I was thinking about that. And so, but instead to be able to do it right there in the moment, while, you know, the cameras are on, the meeting's still being recorded, minutes are taken, I think it's fantastic. And he also had another wonderful piece kind of talking about doing a, like an educational agenda item, and where what the idea was that, you know, at perhaps at each meeting there would just be, you know, one item on the agenda that talks about a various school topic, in really kind of some of those like hot button issues like Chapter 70, mm-hmm. Hold harmless provision, and you know, maybe we kind of, you know, bring it down to, you know, 5 minutes or so. But just so it kind of provides that very, you know, that overview of the topic. One, it's just great information for everybody to have. But also kind of when you, like you mentioned, like, you know, a lot of times you kind of have those, you know, either they pop up on Facebook, you hear them around town. Well, you know, well, I heard that that X, Y, or Z happens. Well, now we can kind of very quickly, the school can, you know, kind of just cut those little, you know, those little moments and say, no, nope, here's what, you know, hold harmless actually kind of means in 5 minutes or less. If you kind of want to go and watch it, we got some PowerPoint presentations with a little audio overlay, whatever the situation is.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, absolutely fantastic. I love those. Love to kind of see where in the next term, you know, what that school committee is going to be able to kind of do with that. Cause I think it's definitely something we should kind of be looking at moving forward. And then the other one, this is from Ruth Ann, talking about, you know, as a school committee member, like I said, you know, KP and I were in the schools just last week, looking at the cafeteria. And oftentimes, the administration will kind of schedule site visits. And so we'll spend, you know, half a day and we'll tackle a couple of, you know, three or four schools around the district, go into the classrooms, really make, you know, walk the building.
Mm-hmm.
And Ruth Ann's idea was to also incorporate town council members into sure. that as well. You know, and like you said at the top of the of this recording, a lot of, you know, schools have changed from the time that from when I was in school, when you were in school and when others were in school. And so to be able to walk those halls and really kind of see, oh, well, this is what you mean when you talk about specialized education. You know, this is what you know, you're talking about when we say we need these funds for these touch views or whatever the situation is, and to kind of bring those folks along as well. And so I think, you know, all of those ideas are absolutely fantastic, and it's going to be really exciting to see where we're going to kind of go from there.
Yeah, I think that'll bring a lot of benefit to community over time, because clearly while you're focused on education within the district to the students, then clearly the parents to make sure they're aware. That's an aspect, respectfully, that education out to the general community hasn't generally been part of your focus. And I think it's well worth the time, especially continuing the discussions around budget, because clearly budget issues are not going away anytime soon. And the more people know the real issues, the real facts, then we can get perhaps, you know, a quicker, easier conversation, respectfully, as opposed to, hey, how come this is going on? Well, no, it's not going on.
Absolutely. And so now I'm excited to kind of see what we can kind of do. I already had some ideas kind of percolating. And yeah, but, you know, as you, we got one more meeting left for this term for the school committee. And so, you know, it'll be up to the next seven to kind of go and take some of those ideas and turn them into a reality. So I'm excited mm-hmm. to see what we're going to do with that.
Yeah. Then quickly, it's more of a current event, but DESE and that Hold Harmless piece, DESE and Department of Local Services have announced a series of listening sessions to relook at Chapter 70 and the local funding aspects. I've already shared that schedule out through Franklin Matters. There are five that are individually in person, in hybrid, I believe, but in person, certainly scattered around the state. There is one that's totally virtual. So clearly, if somebody doesn't want to travel from the east to the west or whatever, they can just tap in virtually to listen, potentially, you know, testify. There's a process and a form to do that. Because to that whole harmless piece, that's an albatross that at some point in time, from my perspective, Franklin needs to address. Yes, we've got a budget issue, operational, yes, but that whole harmless also needs to be addressed in the same discussion, hopefully. However, we need to discuss it. So,
no, and thanks for bringing that up. And again, for folks who, you know, get just kind of now kind of paying attention, effectively with the whole Hold Harmless, it's just we're in this situation because based on the way that the state kind of does their formula funding and all the calculations, they kind of recognize that Franklin is in a position where we can spend more in our schools than what we are. We're capable of investing more. With the Hold Harmless provision, it just states, well, we're not going to decrease your funding levels from last year. And because of that, yeah, we're over 12, I think coming up on $13 million in kind of Hold Harmless money, second only to Boston. And then after that, you could see there's charts that are out there where that the Hold Harmless level of the amount of money that all the other districts receive, it greatly kind of drops off after Franklin. Because the state, with the way that the funding, the way that every other community kind of does their funding, we do have the ability to fund our schools more, and we just are not making those choices.
For further discussion, for sure. Well, thank you for spending time today to have this recap of the school committee meeting this week. And as you said, we've got one more, so there's at least one more Chalkboard Chat coming up. So thank you for taking time. And to the listeners, thank you for listening. And a quick reminder, we do this because Franklin matters.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.